This is the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast from Taylist Media in association with KBB Birmingham 2020.
Welcome to the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast. I'm Taylist Media Managing Editor Andy Davis, and this is officially a bonus episode. Very exciting, that is too. It's an extra one to fit in between the normal weekly episodes. We are, as you know, supported in this season of the podcast by KBB 2020, the biggest kitchen, bedroom and bathroom trade show in the UK, and a big part of that show is the Innovation Awards. These are product awards that look at the new developments, creative ideas in the sector, and I was part of the judging panel that came up with this year's shortlist. At the show, which runs from March the 1st to the 4th at the NEC, the shortlist will be on display and visitors will vote on their favourites to choose the actual winner. But on the judging day, I decided it was a good excuse to have a chat with the other judges about product innovation in general and its importance to kitchen and bathroom designers. We have me, obviously, and our kitchen and bathroom designers Richard Hibbert and Colin Wong, and we've also got Amanda Hughes from Blum. Now, I'll confess that one of the reasons why this is a bonus episode is because the sound quality is not quite as good as our usual episodes. We had some technical gremlins on the day, and so this is actually our backup recording rather than the main recording. So it does sound a lot like we're talking in a submarine. But there's a lot of really good stuff in here, and because of that, I thought it'd be a real shame not to put it up. So over to me in the judging room, and I'll see you at the end. Okay, I think the best place to start here is to just go around the table and do a little explanation of who everybody is. So Amanda, do you want to start with you?
Yeah, hi, I'm Amanda Hughes and I work for Blum in the UK and I'm the Customer Experience Manager.
Now, what does the Customer Experience Manager do?
I look after the customer journey, so anybody who's visiting from our manufacturing or distribution or retailer network, but we also host end consumers, so really just managing that customer journey of people that come to visit us at our head office in Milton Keynes.
Okay, Rich, over to you.
So I'm Richard Hibbert. I've got a retail showroom, kitchens, bedrooms, bathrooms called KSL, and I'm chair of the KBSA.
Okay, so you're a proper retailer.
I am.
You are. Colin, what about you?
I'm Colin Wong. I'm the creative director of Kitchens Defined, based up in Edinburgh, day-to-day studio for kitchens and bathroom, and I've got a separate side that does product design.
Okay, good. So just a little bit of background of why we're here today. We are the judging panel for the Innovation Awards that are done at the KBB show in a few weeks' time. So we've been going through a lot of entries today from manufacturers. They've submitted four new products, new services, so we've been looking at them. So I thought it's worth a chat while we were here just to go through what innovation means in this industry from the manufacturer side, but also from the retailers and designers side. So I'm going to start with you, Carl, over here. What do you look for when you're looking for new products? If a new product's put in front of you, what makes it innovative as far as you're concerned?
It's got to have a lateral edge. If it's a wobbly basic product that's just new, you're not going to stand out if you put that in your studio or sell it to your clients. It's really important that it jumps out of the page with us and immediately grabs your attention. Obviously, it needs to solve a problem. Think of a product to solve a problem from your way up there. Putting design aesthetics with that as well is a perfect marriage. So it's combining design aesthetics with problem solving.
Rich, a lot of products are put in front of you. You get a lot of guys approaching you to sell their products. Is it about that problem-solving thing that Cole's talking about here? Is it, okay, I've never seen that before? What is it that makes you really, your eyebrows go up when they put something in front of you?
We do get a lot of products brought to us, and my pet hate is innovation that's very gimmicky. So it's something that may jump off a page initially, but it doesn't really do anything serve a purpose or help us sell or help the fitting side in any way. So we really want something that's going to tick some or all boxes. And some of the products lately have been brought to us have improved hygiene, have helped streamline the fitting process, things like that. But yeah, they've got to be sellable at the same time.
It's interesting, this where Blum comes in, I think, is Amanda, is that innovation doesn't necessarily have to be a very spectacular thing, a very aesthetic innovation. It can be something as simple as just making that fitting easier.
Yeah, I think we look at innovation in lots of different ways, but we're always looking for win-wins across all sectors of the market. So we innovate products that we've already got. We're always looking at new technologies.
Innovation, it sounds like quite a grand word, I think. It sounds like it has to be the most earth-shattering thing ever. But sometimes it can be just a slight twist on a concept or a way of taking a top Premier League idea and translating it to the mid-market. Would you describe that as innovation?
I think innovation is an overused word. Being so overused, everyone's products is innovative. In my opinion, you want to be different, you want to solve problems, but what you need to be is something that really people can use day in, day out, and offer to their clients and really enhance what the client's day in, day out use of it. So to me, the whole thing is really about, can you really enhance the end user's usability and feeling in the space with that product? Sometimes it's aesthetic, sometimes it's practical.
This is a discussion really about where in the supply chain does innovation happen. You two guys are at the sharp end here. You're the ones who've got to literally sell it to the consumer, whereas the innovation that happens in the manufacturing side happens way further back than it ever gets to this stage. So a company like Blum, or indeed any other manufacturer, they're dealing with R&D in a very conceptual way, aren't they?
We are, but I think we have to understand the full theatre, the full market in which we work. So part of our R&D, which doesn't necessarily seem at face value that it's going to help us develop new hinges, we are actually looking at ergonomics, about living patterns, about lifestyles, multi-generational households, aging populations, small living spaces. I think our R&D reaches far and wide and has an impact on the way we develop new products going forward.
Rich, do you see that by the time it gets to your level, or is your mindset quite understandably thinking, that's great, but I'll never sell it?
There are a lot of products that are like that. There's some stunning products that don't meet our market, either too high or too low. But for us, we install all our products, so we get a lot of hassle from installers. And those little innovations sometimes that make that easier, where it's a wall-hung toilet and there's a system that you don't need to hold the pan while you're screwing it up and fixing it back. There's some really clever bits that come out where companies have taken what they've already got a great product and gone, do you know what, we can make this better. And I like that sort of innovation as well, where they don't just stick to the product they've got. We've seen that with someone in the room here as well, and we see that a lot, and that's sometimes the best innovation for us, that's making it better.
Because I suppose someone could sit in front of you and go, we've invented a solid gold toilet or something.
Yeah.
And you go, wow, that's I wonder how they do that. It's incredible how they've made that. But then you think, so what? But the practical application of it is where it falls to you guys to really make innovation have a point.
Without a doubt, and the products are part of your whole story board to the client. So it fills a role, an aesthetic and practical role. Things like your gold toilet and all these things are obviously the extremes of things. The small things that we've seen today, this problem-solving things that, I mean, people like us get very excited about, but the end users know nothing about. Mm-hmm. So there's two ways to look at things. For us, things behind the scenes are just as important as things to the end user. This is when I believe good manufacturers will speak to fitters, speak to retailers, see what problems they have, and then go back and develop products. You know, I mean, it was really that at the forefront. You see other ones that really don't listen to us, that really don't look at the problems and just design, you know, I mean, in their own little box, and those are the ones that come and go very, very quickly. But you want to see the ones that stay for a long time. I mean, they're solving amazing problems, and they're quite rare.
At Blum, I know for every 50 great ideas that we've had, probably it's a very small percentage of those that actually get to market. And some things can take up to 8, 9, 10 years. It's not about having a brilliant idea and then rushing it to market. It's about actually making sure you are actually fulfilling a need. You are actually problem solving, and you're not just bringing something to market, like you say, that is gimmicky or doesn't really solve the whole picture. It might be great for the fitter and the installer, doesn't necessarily fulfill the need for the end consumer. Might be great for the distribution or the retailer network, but not great for the manufacturing network.
But what I like about that kind of stuff is it's the innovation where you only notice it if it isn't working.
Yeah, exactly. I mean? If it's there, if it's the silent partner within the kitchen. And I think aesthetic is incredibly important. But once you've had your new kitchen for 5, 6, 7 years, and if the average kitchen in the UK lasts for 15 to 20 years, the aesthetics is going to wear off, but this thing's still got to work beautifully. And I think it's those things that you don't notice. Great innovation is there, but not there you don't really notice it happening. It's just like a silent partner in the background.
And Rich, do you think that manufacturers listen enough to the guys like you on the shop floor about the direction innovation should be going, the problems that need to be solved?
Sometimes. There's a lot of manufacturers that do a lot of research with the end consumer, find out about their lifestyles, some in the right way, some in the wrong way. But a lot of research is done now to find out either what we want or what the consumers, even if they don't know what they want, what their lifestyle dictates they need. And so that's a really good thing that we're seeing coming through is products that are fitting the bill before they're needed rather than reactive.
So it's a collaborative exercise amongst everyone in that chain.
I think so. Not from everyone, but from the
I'd love to agree with Richard. I'd love to agree, but I totally disagree.
Only on some products.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be great to think my 21 years in the industry, the manufacturers come to us, listen to us and make products purely because they want to make us happy and sell the product. There's no way that happens across the board. It's without a doubt a commercial decision for these guys when they sometimes make it for the market. They don't really listen. They listen partly to us, but they don't listen all the way to give us the products that really take us to another level. If they did, I'm sure UK would be leading the way in the world kitchen and bathroom market. Unfortunately, I'd love us to be, but we're not. The Italians are, the Germans are, Scandinavians, all these countries have a much more forward-thinking way. In the UK, we're following. Don't get me wrong, we can change. We've led the way. Architecture, art, engineering, all these things in the UK. We've not led the way in kitchen and bathroom design.
I think they're scared a little bit. I think UK manufacturers think that if they're developing, it's a lot of money. I do find that with British manufacturers that we get less innovation maybe and more of a following, that they'll bring it out just after the Germans or just after the Italians. But definitely the Germans and the Italians are pushing forward with those sort of things.
I think companies that are seen as successful innovators, you have to have a culture of innovation across the board. You don't have to have a huge £1 million R&D department if you're fostering innovation and open door policies and ideas. The idea could come from Emma in accounts or Debbie that works on reception, or they're all ultimately end consumers. To have a complete across the board in every single department within the business, you're innovating new processes, new services, and ultimately as well new products. It's not just about investing millions of pounds in these huge R&D departments.
Do you think this is an industry where innovation is restricted by convention? In other words, we have this convention of 600 wide. This, you know, everything has to fit into certain modular blocks. And because the appliance industry doesn't necessarily talk to the furniture industry, who doesn't talk to the worktops, who doesn't talk to the sinks and taps, there isn't that level of coherent thinking until it gets to you guys who actually have to put the stuff together for the customers.
There's definitely a discord there. There's not an open book where everybody listens and services everybody. There's without doubt there's some manufacturers out there that the furniture people have to listen to just because of the volume of their boxes that they sell. That doesn't make for the best innovation. That service in a commercial arm that unfortunately I think stems real creative innovation. The small, more artisan, it's never so commercial. And because it's not so commercial, it has less time and effort put towards it. So it'd be nice for these big players to look at things in a more artisan way, to realise we have to start from somewhere. We don't start from somewhere where we're just going to be box pushers for the big corporates. We can't be that. We want to be unique, standalone individuals who are designing stuff for individual clients. Nobody wants to have a kitchen the same as everyone else. I don't want to design the kitchen, give them the same as everyone else.
But there's no doubt, is there, I think, that while modular nature of kitchens and a lot of bathrooms is still there, the range of that modular choice is much greater than it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago. What do you think, Rich?
I suppose with the research you can put into things now, you are crossing, so you're not just relying on Beckerman to produce a kitchen for us and those products. You are pushing the boundaries. Sometimes you're grabbing things from other markets maybe. And as a designer, you know, if you can do something that's going to be visually good for your client, but you've taken something from the kitchen industry into the bathroom. I know they're closely linked, but there's a lot of separation there as well. So if you can drag things about and be in it yourself, then there's always a bonus.
But you can have an awful lot of, say, bespoke joinery, and an awful lot of companies do some really interesting stuff with that, but they're still limited by the 600 by 600 oven that has to slot into that hole, because I don't know who it was who came up with 600 by 600 is the size of everything.
Sure, it was a German.
But, you know, I mean, you can innovate the technology of an oven all you like, but they all look pretty much the same. Where's the innovation collectively to make it all collectively different?
Things like the oven and everything are serving a purpose. Of course, they want to make them sexy and visually appealing, but they're serving a purpose. This is where the skill of the designer is using the products they have to really not make the oven or something at the forefront of your design. If the oven or a tap is at the forefront of your design's not strong enough. Simply put, you need to go back to school and start again and really think out of the box. And this is what I think we need. We need more emphasis from the designers that is less reliant on the manufacturers. If the collective designers become strong in their own right, a mass body of real creative thoughts, they then have a voice that the manufacturers will come to willingly to follow what we want. But this now is the other way around.
Blum's a good example, isn't it? Because you make the internal bits, the hinges and the drawers.
Yeah, we do.
But you don't make the boxes.
We don't, yeah.
But obviously you collaborate a lot with people who do. What conversations happen between you guys and the furniture manufacturers about what to do next with things?
We do talk to the manufacturing, so we have contacts within the manufacturing arm of the business, but we all are our individual, some of our own parts, they all come together. So our component parts aren't anything without the cabinet manufacturers, and the cabinet manufacturers aren't anything without the appliances. It all comes together. But I have to say, the 4 years I've been in the industry, we do struggle to get people to adopt new products or services. I don't know whether as an industry we're particularly quick at taking on new innovations. We've always done it like that. Like you say, standard worktop heights, standard cab sizes, everything standard. And I think you're right, Colin, pushing the designers to actually start designing and thinking differently about design will then have a trickle-down effect, because it's just, yeah, standard. But I'm thinking, I'm not a kitchen designer by trade. Can you get end consumers to adopt new, or do they like familiar? When you're designing a kitchen for somebody, are they prepared to think beyond the working triangle or think beyond the kitchen, or do they just stick to safe?
That's a very good question, actually, because what the professional designer thinks of as brand new and innovative is years ahead of what the consumer does, because they haven't had a kitchen fitted for 20 years.
We want to push the envelope. We want to design amazing. We want to design innovative and new. I have to say that the market is slightly behind what we think is new and innovative.
So there you go, Rich. How easy is it to push consumers into something that perhaps is unfamiliar to what they have in their head that they want? Because you're thinking, this is a great new technology, this is a great new product, it's perfect, but it might just take that little push.
Some customers love it. I mean, you do get different types of customers. Some customers are wary of anything new, and they're thinking, well, let's see it in the market for 2-3 years before I'm taking it on, because they trust certain products. I mean, if Audi bring out a new car and it's got this, they trust it because they know there's a service backup and everything there. There are certain customers, maybe in the AquaClean toilet, the shower toilets came over to the UK, and people are like, all right, let's see what it's like for a few years. But there's early adopters always, and mm-hmm. some people always want... I've got customers say, I want the latest, I want the best, you know. And it does depend on that client. Some are early adopters and some, for whatever reason, are a bit calmer. I'm in Suffolk, so we've got a few slow.
But if you take let's think of some examples of stuff that's been genuinely innovative bit of kit. So, for example, induction, okay? Mm. Big new technology, very innovative technology. How long did it take for your customers to start understanding what it was and you didn't have to sort of sit and explain it?
It's the strength of the business owner and the strength of how much he can bring his team below him to really believe in the product. If I look back in my 21 years in the industry, there's not been many things that have really blown my mind or here for the mainstay. Induction is the obvious one, the boiling tap. I mean, if you actually look back, there's nothing that over and above that that's really, really, really amazing. We can be guilty of designing for the sake of designing, bringing innovation for the sake of innovation, and over-designing stuff. sometimes simple, well, not simple, it is simple technology induction. You imagine way back then, people were scared about pacemakers, people were scared about these kind of things and all this. Induction is huge today. It's in commercial kitchens now. I mean, boiling tap, you're talking about 9 out of 10 sales are boiling taps. Certain things are here to stay. They're amazing. And certain things are just fads. They're there to try to take money from the end consumers, but they're not going to last the time. We see them day in, day out, and you just know it won't be here in 3-4 years' time. And there's many kitchen retailers out there that say, yeah, that's nice for now. But the main ones, you've got to be an early adopter, you've got to embrace it, and you need to go with it. If you're a strong retailer, your competition sees you doing it, do it well, just like the new car in the driveway, and the other retailers have to follow you because they're doing it along the road. And that's how it spreads.
You know, I'm going to ask you now, don't you, what the fads are?
The fads?
Yeah. Or name a fad.
But I'm very different industry, and I do not believe in turning my oven on by Wi-Fi whilst I'm out of the house or whatever there.
That came up far too early as well. Though,
for me, the whole infrastructure is not ready. I think it's all connectivity is all fair and well within certain remits, but there are certain things that they didn't do prior to that that I thought they should have done. Connectivity, switching your oven on Wi-Fi is something that I need to be convinced myself to convince my clients.
We all know that in 10 years' time, smart home connectivity is going to be part of everyone's lives. Yeah. What we haven't seen yet in this market, I don't think, is the killer use of it.
Yeah,
is that fair, didn't it?
We were sold originally, oh, you can leave your food in the oven, you can turn it on your way home. I'm thinking a chicken in all day is going to go off. You can now have quick heat up, rapid heat up in a few minutes. You don't need it for that. Where I found it really good for our customers was the fact that if you ask anyone to turn their oven on to fan oven 180, it's easy. If you ask them to turn it on to cook for 2 hours or something like that, they all go, they won't read a manual. But actually, get it on a big iPad. Everyone's got an iPad now. That part of the Wi-Fi-enabled appliance is great because you've got a much bigger screen. You've got a really good app to go with it, and you can go, I want it on for 10 minutes, I want it on at this temperature, and bang, it sends it to your appliance. I can see that as a real benefit for using the full function of your oven, but a lot of the ideas for that innovation was probably, one, too early, and two, didn't really solve any problems.
And again, this is where practical application has to catch up with the technology, doesn't it? And that's where innovation meets the shop floor a little bit. Right, well, look, I think that's going to be one of the biggest drivers of innovation in this industry in the next few years. But, Rich, I'm going to look at you. I'm going to put you on the spot here now. Is there a problem that you would like solved? What is it that you think, you know what, if I worked in a kitchen factory tomorrow, I wish someone would just do this?
You get a lot of people that are interested in the planet, the future, their kids. But when you tell them it's £2,000, so they don't have to buy bottled sparkling water anymore, they're kind of like, oh, okay, I'll stick to buying plastic bottles. I'll think about recycling them a bit better. So definitely more affordable products in that way, or naturally that the products evolve to that without changing in price, like the rimless toilets, more of those products that just work in our designs that help the industry and help the planet, really.
What about you, Colin, the kitchen, the bathroom? What someone would wave a magic wand?
It's simple. If I was the man in charge, I'm not, but I mean, who knows?
It's only a matter of time.
Think about if I went to a supermarket and sparkling water was £3 a bottle. Imagine if still water was £2 a bottle. Imagine that my tap that did still a sparkling water was £500. It's a no-brainer. So you can see problem can be solved easily if people would take the commercial hat off for a second and say we can do more good and help the economy, the ecosystem here. Right? Unfortunately, Richard is correct. The tap is not. The tap is, got four figures to it. So there, and the sparkling water could be as cheap as 20, 30, 40p. So you can see it takes a collaboration of government with manufacturers to say, okay, I wouldn't buy a £3 bottle of sparkling water and buy a £500 sparkling tap. That's where it needs to start.
Well, you know what? That's much more worthy than the example I was going to use of a problem that I wish to solve, which is I'm 6'3" and everything's too low. So come on, Mando, as a former chef,
Yeah, what as a former chef and as an end consumer, I think the industry is extremely led by aesthetic, which is key. I think everyone buys with their eyes and nobody wants an ugly kitchen. But I think for me, I've got a beautiful looking kitchen and I inherited it with the house, but it works so badly. And I just think I'd like from designers and kitchen retailers to really embrace the functionality story. I think just the current kitchens, and I've seen a lot of them in my time, I think they work so badly. Just the boxes, no accessibility, no visibility. I would like to see going forward kitchens designed completely differently from the ground up, from the inside out, and then the beautiful wrapping would come sponsored after. Yeah.
It's breaking convention.
Yes, but if you are somebody that works in a kitchen, and yeah, as a trained chef years ago and spending a lot of time in a kitchen, they do actually, when you think about it, 4 years ago, before I came into the industry, I thought my kitchen was fine. But I actually realised as I go along, it is the most incredibly frustrating environment.
One of mine is the synergy, forgive me for using that word, between the sell-by dates and use-by dates on food with the current technology in refrigeration. Yeah. Because what is on the back of that packet doesn't necessarily link up with how long that refrigerator can keep that food fresh. And I think that's one of the issues with throwing food away, is that people throw food away that's absolutely fine.
That's education.
Because the date on the back says...
I trained as a chef, and my wife will go to chuck something away, and I'll say, if you taste it, it's absolutely fine, unless it's raw chicken that potentially you're going to get ill from. If it's yogurt, you're not going to get ill trying a bit of yogurt and things like that, but people just look and throw.
Manufacturers collaborating with designers simply needs to increase immediately. If that happens, what you'll see is a very big change in this box thing you're talking about. You'll see, standard kitchens slowly evolving in a way that we need to. We can't be sitting here in 20 years' time and you're talking about 600 by 600 oven in a box and box and box. If it is, that means we're manufacturer-led without the designers.
Well, look, thank you very much to the three of you. It's been a really fascinating day. And we'll see the results of our judging at the KBB show from the 1st to the 4th of March at the NEC. So I'll see you there.
See you.
So that was the judging panel for the Innovation Awards at the KBB 2020 show. So thank you to Colin Wong, who you can find at developmentdirect.co.uk, Richard Hibbert, who is at kslsudbury.co.uk, and Amanda Hughes from Blum, who is at blum.com, although you could probably work that one out. Don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast to make sure you never miss an episode, including the live ones we're doing at the show. And we'll see you next time for the last episode before the show, and it's with me and all three of our editors. So see you then.